Good afternoon, friends.
Well, hello.
Howdy.
How is everyone?
Oh, I'm fine. Doing good. It's like another week, just ready for nice weather to be back. I'm tired of the cold.
It's dreary here today and yesterday and the day before that.
Yeah, same here. But supposedly it's going to be 59 on Sunday and Monday or something. So it'll be like summer. I'm excited.
Andrew?
I was just like, 59 is summer to you. That's what I'm still trying to wrap my head around. I'm pretty sure it's like 55 here right now. And that's cold for me. Yeah. It's going to be like in the 70s this weekend.
I was just telling my fiance, like, it's funny because there's days when it's like 45 degrees. And if you come into a day from summer into the 45s, then you're like, man, it's so cold. And then going from like the 20s or whatever when it snowed recently, then getting into a day where it's 45 degrees out, you're like, wow, it's nice out. It's like funny how relative it ends up being.
The 20s?
Yeah, it gets fairly, we like, I don't know, it's the Midwest, so we end up getting like hot summers and cold winters, and it's just terrible, wrecks havoc on the roads and everything. It's kind of like the worst of both worlds.
Nate showed me a picture earlier, and I was like, wait, is there snow on the ground? I was like trying to figure out whether I needed a wetsuit to go surfing earlier.
Yeah. Snow. I would rather not have any most of the time, but there's like once in a while. Maybe I'd rather just go visit snow. That's how it should be.
Yeah. It is also pretty dreary here, though. But, you know, it'll be here before we know it, and then all of a sudden we'll be like, it's too hot. It's way too hot. Where's winter? And then we will repeat the cycle.
Yeah, I hear you. So what's new with you this week? Any new interesting projects or anything going on?
This week I was uncharacteristically a little slow. It's kind of funny. So I think I've mentioned this before. I have ADHD and I have a prescription for ADHD medication. And my doctor retired, and in true characteristic fashion, I procrastinated finding a new one, then did find a new one, and then overslept the appointment, also in very characteristic fashion. And I ran out of medication, and it's been like a week. So this week I have been just dragging heel, but on Monday I have another appointment to hopefully get this situation sorted out, because I feel like a slug stuck in Play-Doh.
Oh man, that's tough.
I was actually telling Chris before we started, I, as of yesterday, tested for ADHD and started medication yesterday, and my world is rocked right now.
Well, yeah, rub it in my face, Jason. That's fine.
Well, how long have you been on medicine for it?
I have been on medicine. So I found out I had ADHD pretty much freshman year of college. I didn't even really know what it was prior to that. And I didn't get medicated until junior year of college, probably late junior year. So it's been about 2 years. And the change in life quality in those 2 years is just kind of insane.
I've never thought of myself as ADHD, but I did the test yesterday, and she was like, you're kind of high on the ADD part. Like, not high, you're like, you know, like teetering
right
above normal. And like, it was like I can't remember what it was out of, maybe 19 or 16. It was like 25 for the hyperactivity part. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess it makes sense. I mean, it's a test, and I guess I passed it. So,
yeah. So,
flying colors.
Funny enough, when I took that test, so there's more than one test, because when I scheduled with this new doctor. They're like, oh, you're going to need to take another test and it's different. And I was like, that's freaking fantastic. I love wasting my time at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Thank you so much for this gift. But other than that, when I took the first test with my original doctor, it was a test where basically they flashed things on a screen and you hit the space bar when a certain character showed up or something like that. And I did it completely opposite of what it was supposed to be. Like, I hit the space bar every time, like the opposite of what I just did the opposite of what I was supposed to do. And they got my test results and they called me and they were like, your test results are completely invalid. Like, what the hell did you do? And I told them and they were like, yeah, you did the opposite of what you were supposed to do. And they're like, okay, so here's the deal. Like, you come in and we're going to get you a prescription immediately because obviously something's going on up there. And like, and then we'll test you again later. But yeah, okay. So I've been on it for two-ish years and I can function without it 100%. I don't take it on the weekends usually, but if I don't take it, and I told my doctor this, I think one time, because at one point I wanted to get off of it because I was having side effects, but the side effects go away, Jason, if you are experiencing those, they definitely go away with time. But I wanted to get off of it for a little bit and they were like, all right, well, just don't take it for a week and then see how you feel. And they're like, there's no side effects to not taking it. It gets out of your blood in like, I don't know, a day, something like that. And I came back like the next month and I was like, it was awful. I was like, there are 100% side effects to not taking it. And my doctor was like, no, there's not. They're like, have you considered that's actually just how you feel without it? Damn. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was skeptical. I guess I still am, but like I'm following the little like onboarding process to it. And like yesterday I took it twice, it like divided up and I just like rolled through the whole day. Like somebody was like, hey, can I get a code review? I was like, yeah, just like rolled through it. Usually I'd be like, yeah, let's like talk through it, like explain it to me. And like, I just understood everything. So yeah, we'll see what happens. It also brought down my anxiety some yesterday, which was nice. So
that was also, they gave it to me, because I told them I had like, I'm not anxious whatsoever, but I've had issues with depressive thoughts in the past. And they said that taking the Vyvanse would basically act as like a mood stabilizer, because I take Vyvanse. I don't take Adderall. I take Vyvanse, but they were like, well, this should act as a mood stabilizer for you. And it definitely does. And the reason they gave me Vyvanse instead of Adderall is because this is a fun fact and not related to coding at all, but Adderall can pass through the blood brain barrier and Vyvanse cannot. And because of that, Adderall is much more susceptible to being used in a, I don't know, what's it called? In a improper way, I guess. Like you can snort it and things like that. You can't snort Vyvanse because it won't pass through the blood-brain barrier. So there's literally actually like no benefit to snorting it. If anything, you get less of a dose. And I have a streak of addictive behavior 100% in my life and impulsivity. And they were like, this is what you are going to take. And it has worked out amazing for me. And I need that shit back so I can start acting normal again.
Mm. Yeah, it's fascinating. I have pretty bad obsessive compulsive. I'm a lot better about like things having to be organized, but I do like, I worry about a lot of things and then I obsess about those things. And it's really bad. And like yesterday it kind of calmed that for me. So we'll see what happens. The first 10 minutes of this got real quick. So Ruby, trying to think, yes. Anybody do anything cool in Ruby this week?
I finally upgraded Go Rails to 2.7 in production and actually to Rails 6 as well. It's not been on Rails 6 for a long time. I was like, I don't remember why I didn't upgrade, but I think it was like, I don't remember now. There was some reason why I didn't do it, and then just like don't really have many features or anything to add to Go Rails, you know? And so I just left it. And then the other day I was like, I guess I should upgrade that. And probably it was me just procrastinating on other things where I was like, oh, hey, I can do this instead. You know, instead of the hard thing I should be working on. So nothing, you know, too eye-opening on that. It was actually a really seamless little upgrade. But, man, until Rails 6, I hope that the next, like, patch version of Rails 6 comes with some improvements to all those deprecation warnings and things. But
I was literally about to ask about that, because that's
that is the same.
That is awful. Like, and I did what people said, like, go and add that Ruby ops and environment variable and, like, you know, like hide the deprecation warnings. But then, like, if you switch Ruby versions, that flag doesn't work for other Ruby versions. So, like, you can't just have that always in your, like, bash RC file. So, because I did that, and then I switched to a different app that was, like, on an older Ruby. And then, like, all of my Ruby commands just stopped working. And I was like, that's weird. Why is it complaining about some, like, flag? I'm running Rails C. There's no flags being passed in here. And then I realized it was the environment variable. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm guessing that maybe the next patch version might fix it. But I'm hoping it's not Rails 6.1 that we have to wait for, but maybe we do. I don't know. Do you guys know?
I've been watching the commits, and I know that they've been adding in fixes for that. I do not know when it's coming out, because
in 6.0 or 6 or in master.
They're in master. I don't know if they backported them to 6 or not. I haven't been paying that close attention, but I do know I have been watching commits roll in for fixing issues with the 2.7 deprecations.
Cool. Yeah, it was driving me nuts. I mean, you open the Rails console and it's now like 50 lines of random stuff. And you're like, really? So luckily, you know, most gems aren't doing it, but there's things, you know, built into Active Record or whatever that trigger it. So it's like you can't run a Rails app without getting those warnings. Kind of frustrating.
Yeah, that's the one reason that we haven't really upgraded to 2.7 at CodeFund, because Nate and I usually keep everything up to date. Like, we try to keep the gems almost always up to date. We always upgrade to the newest version of Rails. We've always upgraded to the newest version of Webpacker. We've always kept up to date with Ruby. But for 2.7, I was like, I don't think we should do this, just because the amount of deprecation warnings is so aggravating. And there's nothing really in 2.7 we need right now, so we might as well just wait until either 6.0.3 drops or 6.1, either or. But yeah, there's another thing in 6.1 we really need, and I think we're going to have to monkey patch it because of the changes to Chrome coming on February 4th.
Oh, what's that?
The same site cookie attribute for Chrome. I don't know a ton about actually what it is. I guess that's probably something I should have figured out. But Chrome basically wants this cookie attribute called same site set, and it needs to be set to none, I believe. And that was not possible until Rack 2.1 dropped. And there's some commented out lines in Rails to disallow it until that Rack version was released, and now it is. So there is a PR to add it to Rails to, like, so that you can set that same site cookie attribute. And but, like, that those changes take in effect on February 4th. So I'm pretty sure Nate and I talked, and I briefly considered, Nate was like, no, don't do that. I briefly considered monkey patching Action Pack. or just overwriting it somehow to like fix it, because it's literally one line. Mm-hmm. Nate was like, let's just make a middleware to do it. So I think that's what we're going to do.
Oh, yeah. I like that idea. Do you know if that's something you can test in like Chrome Canary builds or something before February?
I do not know. I just know if you go to a lot of pages, any pages that's accepting cookies, really, you're going to likely see warnings about the same site stuff. And it's kind of annoying because at CodeFund, like, we don't store the cookie. Like, when we put an ad on someone's website, we destroy the cookie immediately after their request. And we do some stuff around that. So we don't save those cookies. But if you look on a site that has our ads on it, you still get those errors in, or their warnings in the Chrome console about the same site attribute, because they're not getting, it's not getting set. And it's like, this is so frustrating because we're not even, we don't even want or need the cookie. Like, we delete the cookie and it expires like immediate, or it expires like in the past. So it's not even a valid cookie, but it still creates the warnings in the Chrome console. And some people have asked about that.
That's annoying. And yep. You reminded me of the Rack 2.1.1 release. Did you guys have issues with that too? Because I upgraded Jumpstart Pro to just update all the gems the other day. And then I noticed on the website, all of the avatars people had uploaded were missing. And I was like, that's kind of strange. Like, they're all being uploaded to active storage. So you look at the Rails logs and then it's like, there's some file related error. And I start looking it up and it's like, you know, rack file, and then trace it down to the new rack 2.1 version that got released that like changed something related to that. And then voila, all of active storage is broken for me. And then I open up Sidekick on another app and it's like, oh yeah, that's broken too. And then I look in the issues on GitHub for Sidekick, and Rack 2.1 was the culprit there as well. And I think 2.1.2 was out as of a couple days ago or something that should fix all that stuff. But yeah, I like just upgraded those things, and you know, it wasn't stuff that I had any tests for or whatever. You know, I didn't expect to. It doesn't really matter if the Sidekick web interface goes down for me. Like, it's not a critical thing, but I, you know, was like, oh, that's kind of surprising. So, yeah, did you guys run into that as well?
We haven't. Now I'm freaking paranoid. No, we are on Rack 2.1, it looks like. No, I haven't seen that, and now I'm worried I just haven't seen it. But, no, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah. Yeah,
we do active storage uploads, so.
Yeah, interesting. I know I hit it at least twice with different apps, so yeah, I was like kind of surprised. And I assumed, being Rack, like, my assumption was that it's going to get fixed really fast. So I think I just forced an older version of Rack to fix that. The same kind of thing happened just the other day, actually, where my receipts gem for PDF receipts that I use in a bunch of things. And some customer emailed me and was like, hey, just want to let you know that none of your fonts show up in PDFs on Windows 10 now. And I was like, that's strange. I haven't touched that gem in like 9 months or more. Like, what happened? So he mentioned it was Acrobat Reader they were using, and I opened up a Windows 10 VM, and sure enough, like, there's a receipt for Hatchbox with only the Hatchbox logo and the rest of it's white and a couple black lines to separate a table. And I was like, perfect. Oh, that looks exactly how I planned it. So, yeah, I was like,
at least you got the logo.
Right. So I looked up what's going on, and we just used Prawn for generating those PDFs. I figure, you know, maybe that is the issue or something. I don't know. And turns out the TTF like font library they have got upgraded recently and then broke stuff too. So I don't know. It's been a weird week of random gem dependencies that are, you know, several layers deep that you don't expect to be something you need to worry about, just causing havoc. So hopefully that's over for a little while. It doesn't happen very often. And then to have a couple in the same week was strange.
Yeah, I just don't upgrade things.
You got that Debian user mindset, huh?
Yeah. No, I haven't looked at any of the rack stuff, but I did like the 2.7 and the Rails 6 upgrades, and it was, I don't know. I know they're just deprecation warnings and stuff, but it was overwhelming for me. I was like, is stuff breaking? I don't know. So, I did start a new app last night, and I started to do it in Phoenix. I was so close, but I couldn't commit. I just, every time like I want to start something, I always like explore the land, and then I just always know Rails so well. It's like what I say every time. I just know it, like it's just easier to use. Mm-hmm. But yeah, okay. I started a SMS application for churches last night.
Oh, that's cool. So what's it going to do?
So it's like going to be a conversational tool. So like I've built church software before with like a co-founder, and this is kind of like our next thing out of that. But essentially like it's just, you know, there's a lot of services, I guess, that you can just send out like text blasts, like email blasts, you know, like notifications. But this one will be like one, and this exists, like this is anything new to the world, but it'd be like one that people can respond to. So like they can also just ask questions like by texting a number. So we'll see how it goes. I've not written an SMS application before. So.
Oh, cool. That really, really brought me back, because when I graduated school, my like second job was getting back into Rails. My first job was in Perl, which I hated. But one of my friends that worked with me at the second job, he had some app that I forget who his customers were, but yeah, he had one of those, like basically an SMS mailing list of sorts. And I remember helping him out on that. It was kind of fun. I think we used Twilio way back when, but that would have been 2011 or 2012 or something. It's a long time ago. I haven't really built too much SMS stuff since. Are you using Twilio for yours?
I looked at Twilio. I'm probably going to use Nexmo.
Oh, yeah?
It's,
I don't know much of that.
It's a hair cheaper than Twilio. Laravel uses it for their, like, they have a notification concept built into Laravel. And by default, I think it uses, like, the Nexmo library for SMS notifications. So I was like, well, if they use it, obviously I trust it. And so,
interesting. That's another thing that like action text being built into Rails is nice. And I know we've complained about like, why don't we just have an official authentication library? I feel like an official notification library would be awesome as well. You know, like a way to like opt in and out of email or SMS or whatever, and I don't know, some rendering pipeline for that. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. I also considered using Laravel for it. I always just come back to, not only do I know Rails, but like I know how to debug Rails, and I'm like kind of nervous to like build a system and then something go wrong. I know that's like how you learn, but
you don't write code perfect the first time?
Oh, that's
weird.
Maybe now that I'm on medicine.
Oh, yeah, that'll fix it for you, I promise. No, no more bugs. Yeah. Bug free.
This is the nice magic I have with screencasting. I don't have to write bugs.
That is true.
But yeah.
It's cool.
That's pretty fun. So what... how long do you think it's going to take you to build your first prototype of it? Or are you already kind of like done with the core stuff you were planning?
So I just started it last night, and I really should like create a template or like just use Jumpstart, because I go through a lot of the same like hoopla each time. So I spent most of last night just like bootstrapping the app, you know, getting Devise in and factory bot, things like that, and kind of turning off generators. And really, I should just push that into a template. But I don't know, hoping to get to work on it some this weekend. I'd like to, so my goal is that I'd like to build a really crappy prototype and then show some people and get them to tell us what they think. And my goal is to like not put a lot of design in terms of like UI into it right now, and also try to not get too attached to features, and then work with people and let them kind of tell us what they think. And that way it's easy to throw away, or it's easy to keep, kind of thing. So
I like it.
That's what I'd like to do. We'll see how well that goes.
Yeah. Are you going to make it intentionally crappy? You're just like,
I mean,
I could allow this text, but I choose not to.
I mean, I might throw like a bootstrap on it just to get through some of the prototyping. As we talked about, like, I don't know. I may keep Bootstrap. It just depends. Like, I use a Bootstrap theme on one of my other apps, and it's not perfect, but not having to make those little design decisions is pretty nice, because I'm not a very good designer.
I hear you. That's the one major complaint I think most people have with Tailwind. And then, I don't know, hopefully Tailwind UI will solve that problem.
That, and I saw today, so there's once, I feel like we might as well call this like remote Laravel. There's a tool called Laravel Shift.
I've heard of
it. And yeah, it automatically upgrades your Laravel apps in a like, and it creates a PR for you. It's really cool. Like, you can go from like version 4 all the way up to like version 6.
Wow.
And yeah, it's super cool.
Is it making assumptions of like, will enable compatibility for older versions, or is it, you know, I'm trying to think of in a Rails context, like how you would do that from like, here's a Rails 2.3 app. Let's make one PR for upgrading all the way to 6. I feel like you would almost be forced into like, you know, the optional is true or for belongs to associations, like, wouldn't you have to turn that off or something? Or just, I guess, edit a bunch of stuff? I don't know.
I don't know either. I know it may not be straight 4 to 6. Like, you may have to do the incrementals. Like 4 to 5, 5, 1 to 5, 3. I'm not really too sure on that. But it's cheap. It's like 12, between like $6 and $20 per shift.
Awesome. Wow.
Yeah. So, the person who made that, named Jason McCreary, and has a video out, I guess today or yesterday, of shifting from Bootstrap to Tailwind.
Whoa. So you can actually just, like, here's my code, and it just rewrites it for you?
Yep. So he ran it on the Laravel Shift website, which is in Bootstrap 3, and it converted over to Tailwind. And so, like, some things are off a little bit, and he says that's intentional because he defaults to Tailwind, like, base styles. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty dang close, and it leaves, like, you still see, like, call small 4 and stuff, and he's like, why do you think, like, you're probably wondering why we left those, and he's like, that's because Bootstrap interactivity requires that. So, like, he, like, clicks a modal, and it appears. So I guess it's using, like, Bootstrap JavaScript, but with Tailwind.
Oh, I see. Wow, that's really slick. Huh.
It's really cool.
I was just fiddling with some of the styles on Go Rails this week, and, oh, man, every moment of that where I'm, like, tweaking the layout for the episodes and their thumbnail and stuff, the whole entire time I was sitting there like, man, I just wish I just wish I had Tailwind installed. I don't really want to have both Tailwind and Bootstrap there together. It's just too much. But every second of that process, I was like, man, if there was an easy way to convert this Bootstrap stuff over to Tailwind, I would use it. And sounds like there is. And that seems like something that's totally generic, like not a Laravel specific thing either. So that sounds awesome.
Yeah, this tool is independent of that, and I don't think it's out yet, but it's really cool.
Man, you're going to have me wasting my weekend converting from Bootstrap over to Tailwind.
I think they said they released a beta, maybe? I don't know. He said something about pushing something to GitHub on it at the end of that video.
I love that idea. That sounds like it wouldn't be, I feel like converting from Bootstrap to Tailwind is probably not terrible if you're writing that tool, because yeah, you got to deal with things like cards or whatever, but instead of like card and card body, you already kind of know, and you can look at Bootstrap and see exactly what those implement, whether it's padding or border or shadows or whatever, then just like replace it with a few extra classes from Tailwind. So like replace one with maybe four or five classes and voila, you're like kind of done, which is pretty slick.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm reading through the Twitter comments of this. It's like, I've got a Rails app. Is it compatible? And they're like, and Jason says, if your goal is to make Styles Tailwind, absolutely. It's optimized for Laravel, but will support any, in quotations, web app within a week. Hmm. And then someone else said, I've got a foundation site I'd love to switch over. And they said, we'll optimize for foundation the final launch. So
nice. Dang, that's cool. Now we can start asking for those esoteric like frameworks and convert it over. Oh, well, I wonder though, like, I wonder if you could just like build something completely generic where you're like, well, yeah, let's download the style sheets for like GitHub and convert it over to Tailwind. I bet it's like really hard, but probably possible. You would just have to like, you know, look for, here's hover classes on this button. Let's, or in their CSS, then let's put it in the HTML instead of in the CSS. Bet you something like that would be possible eventually. That would be sick, man. I don't need another project. I'll let him deal with all that.
So I kind of like went way off base there, but yeah, it's so easy to spin up a Rails app, and I've got it kind of where I want. I've come to the point where I don't really have like a bone in the fight in the RSpec mini test debate anymore. But I went with mini test using factory bot instead of fixtures. And so far I've been pretty happy with it. It's, I don't know, it just works.
Yeah.
Wrote tests on a side project. What?
Dude, I not only wrote tests, I TDD'd.
Is this what a senior developer is? Am I in the presence of someone great?
No. That when I like pair with people at work and I do TDD, they're like, "Are you okay?" Because like it's not the thing I do first usually. But
Jason, when you start, you know, getting into teaching your kids math and stuff, you're gonna be like, you know, well, before we start to figure out what, you know, X plus Y is, we have to remember we got to write a test first. We need to check for, you know, the result is 10. So we're looking for that. And we got to then go write our math formula to see if the result's right.
Yes. Assert 10. Assert equal 10.
Yeah. So there, you know, the teacher will be like, you know, make sure you show her your work on your exam. And they're like writing mini tests. Instead, the teacher's like, what is this nonsense?
Class extra math test extends.
That sounds like extra credit to me.
I like it.
I think we've talked about this before. I had to write out Java code in my CS exams.
I did too.
I think we had a little bit of that too. Yeah. I loved it. It was my favorite. I do that every day now. I write my code out on paper first.
I lost 10 points because I forgot a semicolon.
10 points? Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, a compiler wouldn't have caught that.
Yeah. It's like, me. Yeah, like, oh, the compiler wouldn't have told me, and I would have just added it and been done. Like, oh, big deal. You know, that was more important back in the punch card days. You know, you'd have to resort through all your punch cards and everything. So it's important, dude.
Yeah. Well, all right. This is a joke. I'm going to qualify this as a joke, but the punch card days are usually where the teachers who are making you write Java code on paper are coming from. So,
yeah, for real.
Is a punch card a monolith?
I don't know.
Well, maybe. It's a bunch of parts. It's a bunch.
Maybe you staple it together.
Or is it the first microservice?
Yeah, I wonder. There's a bunch of them. They're all separate, right?
Hmm. But is it a majestic microservice?
It is.
Good man.
Other than that, did some Stripe stuff, of course, because I should just like apply at Stripe.
Yeah, you technically work for Stripe, but you like only like implement their API for one other customer.
Yeah, I'm basically just like a Stripe contractor.
Yeah, right.
With benefits. Yeah, I know we're exploring some stuff internally, like for our actual Podia subscriptions, like making some upgrades to match like modern Stripe subscriptions, and my head is exploding. So like, you know, plan, I guess, like when I assume when subscriptions and Stripe came out, like you could just have one plan. I assume that multiple plans came later.
Yeah, I believe so.
And so we use single plan, like, so, you know, like Stripe subscription dot plan. But if you like were to ever add multiple, plan becomes nil. And so like, yeah, that could very easily just one day just bite us. So working on upgrading some of that, and it's better than CA.
What's a little unfortunate, I guess, on that like upgrade there is like, if you ever accidentally forgot to pluralize it, then like your code's still gonna run. It's just gonna return nil at random, and it's like you're not gonna get a compiler error from that, right? Like that's going to be just a something returned nil and it shouldn't have, and good luck finding it. Those are kind of the worst. I wonder. It almost feels like something you should be able to configure in their gem. That's like throw an exception if we're doing stuff in an old way for you know, certain versions or something. But I don't know how they do it, but they're always releasing new versions of that Stripe gem. And like, you know, there's never anything you have to worry about. You can always use the latest version of that gem, and the API version that you're connecting with is like all it really needs to know. And it gets that from the API request anyways, because it's attached to your API keys. And it's like the ease of using that gem is just incredible, except for situations like that where you're like, no, please, please, like, you know, explode when I do something old. Like, I don't want to do that. But it's kind of probably counterintuitive to how they implemented the gem a little bit, just because it's like we're trying to always smooth things over so the upgrades are easier or whatever, but that might be a case where you're like, please make it harder a little bit.
Yeah, because now like to get the plan we have to go to like Stripe subscription dot items, and like you could just say dot first, right? But what happens if you do end up adding multiple plans one day? So like, well, you need to actually like filter the items and look for the item that has the matching plan ID.
Right.
And it's not like it's impossible. It's just reaching for dot plan is much easier and I'm all about the easy life.
Yeah, and it's not something you can easily add, like, some sort of internal method. I mean, you could monkey patch it and add your own method of, like, plan, but it takes a plan ID instead. But you don't really want to do that, especially because that might be something they do in the future in the gem or whatever. And so now your code ends up just having to, like, filter through the plans and search for the right one and do a find with a block or something. And it's just, yeah, it makes it just that much more kind of less of a no-brainer when you're integrating with their API, which is like what we've complained about so many times with SCA. It's like just not intuitive anymore because you have to think about those little nuances constantly.
I often wonder though, like, could Stripe have done that any better given the requirements they were given?
I don't think so. I mean, they don't think so either. Done such a darn good job with the APIs before that I think this is the best that they could have done. They were also under a pretty short timeline. And the only complaint I really have is their documentation for it is not very clear on the concepts. They're like, here's a million different ways your business could work. And setup intents versus payment intents and things are just not as kind of clear conceptually as I think they could be explained. And that was my frustration with it. Like wrapping my head around, like, what am I supposed to do here? Versus like, you know, reading all this stuff, all the like API docs was pretty straightforward. It was just like,
right,
I don't know when I'm supposed to use a setup intent versus a payment intent. Like, what if I want to do a subscription today with a 5-day free trial and, you know, collect a credit card up front versus tomorrow I want to do it with no like trial and charge them immediately? I didn't know that you had to do a separate process for that. Like one with a setup intent, one with a payment intent. It wasn't very clear to figure out that kind of thing. But the rest of it I thought was done really well. So they're doing well with what they were, the cards they were dealt, I guess.
Totally. Their API docs are phenomenal. It's the other docs that are tough. Where they like kind of conceptually talk about things.
Agreed.
That's where, like, yeah, it just kind of, it's difficult to follow, and sometimes it feels like you get conflicting information.
Yeah, especially when they'll sometimes reference non-SEA guides or something. Like, I don't think intentionally, but then probably half of the confusion I had at the beginning was, okay, you still support all of the old stuff because it's not required to support SCA, and they know how much more complicated things are with SCA. So they're like, we're going to keep supporting sources and all of the old style. And then we're going to have this other section that's going to be, you know, the new style, but it's not going to be very separated in our docs. It's all kind of there next to each other. And like, you have to figure it out. And I was like, what is happening? That took a long time to wrap my head around.
Yeah, I've looked at a couple of other services, not payment services, just like Nexmo and Twilio, their API docs. And they're decent, but I've been like spoiled with Stripe because it tells you like exactly, like, here's all the JSON that you can get back. And here's a description of what everything does. And here's your API keys in it and some test data.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve and I were working on, manage databases for Hatchbox so that you could just create a DigitalOcean or RDS managed database inside Hatchbox automatically. And the gem for DigitalOcean was pretty up to date, except they didn't have any API wrappers for any of the managed databases. So we forked it and started to like work on our own version and implement what we needed, but we also asked them about it, and it was really nice to just see, like, you know, they have a JSON file in their examples and their tests that we could just copy paste from their docs page, put it in there, and it, everything worked just fine. And then they eventually released the like full support for all of that. And one of the bugs we found was like, you know, they have a special little handlers depending on the status code it gets back. And, you know, there was like a one of those, like if it's a 202, parse the JSON and return this. And then it didn't handle like a 201. And so the little typo took us a long time to figure out, but I was like reading through the docs and they're like very similar to Stripe's API reference. And I just happened to like that 201 is not a 202. I wonder if that's what we've spent the last 4 hours trying to figure out why this isn't working. Sure enough, it was. Those are interesting moments. But boy, docs have come a long ways in the last 5 to 10 years, I feel like.
I had to work on some Spark Post stuff, and they have an entire like package you can download into Postman. And like I'm looking for a couple of new like attributes on a webhook, and I can just like run like the webhook I want in this package. It's like a click event webhook, and I can just see all the attributes. It's really cool. It's like a little bit different style of documentation in a way, but it was really convenient.
Huh. You'll have to link to that. That'd be interesting to see.
If I can find it. Jamie, our CTO, sent it to me because he is the know-all. Also, I've been meaning to do something for the past couple of weeks, and that is I just want to the three people that listen to this show, shout out my coworker Basil, who has been a saint working with me on SQL stuff. So I have no clapping or anything like that to play, but shout out Basil. There you go.
Man, that's good. Yeah, SQL stuff can be real frustrating, especially because like you can get into this like this thing with Active Record where you like you have an intuition with how SQL works, but you're not really writing SQL every day, so you like don't have to worry about the difference between an inner join and a left join and all that stuff, and it just works because your associations are defined correctly. And like there's a lot of people, including myself, who you know, you get into some advanced stuff and you're like, you know, it's really hard to like track this down in Active Record. I got to write SQL directly. And I haven't done that in a long time. And now I got to go read all the docs again and try and like, I can intuit what I need to do. But to actually figure out how to convert that to the actual query you need to write can be a little daunting sometimes.
You're talking about me like I'm not right here.
What's funny, that reminded me of my first job interviews. They asked me to like write design a database, and I'd never had a database class, and the only stuff I knew was from Rails and Django. Like, well, I knew if I wanted to build this in Rails, I'd have to create migrations to create a table and have these columns to do associations. And I was like so not confident when they were asking me like, you know, we want to store this. Oh, well, you know, the boss now asked you to change it to add support for this now. What do you do? And I was like, well, I guess I'd change this and whatever if I was going to do it in Rails, but I don't know. And they were like, at the end of that, they were like, you finished that way too easily. Like, everyone else has struggled with that. And I was like, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, Rails, I guess, has taught me it like at a high level, but I don't know how to write all that SQL yet still. It was a strange moment. But, you know, it's hard to then step back and like, teach yourself SQL or like find time to just grab a book or whatever. Like, Andrew, are you seeking out, trying to like spend more time just learning SQL directly, or is it not even worth doing right now until you need it for some
reason? I feel personally attacked by that. No, I'm just kidding. I have a SQL book sitting on my desk. I have,
under your mom,
in my opinion, the world's greatest SQL expert sitting on the other end of Slack from me. Shout out Nate.
There you go.
and I have the internet. So when I need it, I have those three things. And yeah. When all else fails, I have the Rails logs.
What sequel book did you get?
I have this bad habit of walking into bookstores, coming out with like $100 worth of books and never reading a single one of them.
I have that same problem, but it's just online.
Yeah.
Well, mine, it's called the Sequel Pocket Guide. And it's got, it's just a small, like 100 and 200 page book with basic stuff in it, but it shows you how to do it in each of the main, like MySQL, Oracle, Postgres, SQL Server, DB2, etc.
MongoDB.
No, there's no MongoDB here. Also, real quick interjection. Jason, did you just release last week's episode during this episode? Because that's pretty meta.
Yep. I scheduled it to go out right before we started this one. It went out at 3, and it's 3:03. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I'm here to party.
We're so productive, right?
This one will go out Monday, and then we'll catch back up. I was going to say, I recently purchased a book on the advice of my coworker, Andrew Famara, who's much better, by the way, and I'm glad for that. He had a little hospital stint.
Yeah.
The Art of PostgreSQL. And then I have another book sitting next to it called The Art of SQL, which were both like highly recommended to me. So
I'll have to pick those up. Then they can sit with the rest of the books I won't read.
Yeah. I'm looking at Eloquent Ruby, which is one I've actually read. Art of SQL, which is one I started, never finished. Art of PostgreSQL, which I just started. Hope I finish it. Probably not. Designing Data Intensive Applications, Programming Elixir, SQL Anti-Patterns, Rediscovering JavaScript. That was actually a good one. Rails 5 Test Patterns, Pooter. And then I get into some obscure stuff. The Little Schemer, which is a book on Scheme, obviously. And this other book that's like from the late 70s. I can't see the name of it, but it's like supposed to be like one of the founding fathers' books of computer science. So, and out of all of those, I've not finished but one. So,
I just imagine you in like a really dark wood library, just full of Laravel books around you.
It's so absurd that I know so much about a framework that I do not write.
That's good to know, though. Like, we've talked about that in the past. Like, knowing what other people, how other people are approaching problems just, like, teaches you other options, which you might be able to pull off the shelf and use at some unexpected time. So it's good to know. That's the thing. Don't feel like you're betraying Ruby or anything. It's good to know.
It's nice because it's so, like, it's a really fast feedback loop because it's just like, it's PHP. And so like using Laravel Valet runs Nginx or Apache. I think it's Nginx, like behind the scenes. And so literally you just like say Valet link and then your project name. And so if I was like this thing I'm working on is called Church Chat, I'd be like Valet link Church Chat. And then I'd have churchchat.dev automatically wired up for me, and then like I don't have to restart a server or anything or worry about like Spring. Like I just make changes and reload. It's awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna make a joke about Spring caching stuff and being frustrated for half an hour.
Yeah, so
does anyone still use like the POW or whatever, that was that little web server thing that would link .dev domains or whatever? Or Puma Dev, I think, was another option. And I tried that last. I remember there was some like SSL thing I couldn't get to work right on my Mac.
I'm still like surprised you guys are using Spring.
Yeah, it's not Sprung.
I don't Spring. I disable Spring in my environment. I delete the gem every time I create a new app. It doesn't help. It creates problems. I hate it. Bootsnap fixed it.
I'll leave it in sometimes. Like I left it in this project and then I'm just waiting. Like, I know at some point it'll be time to gut it, but it's not there yet. So
I feel like Zeitwerk has resolved some of those issues for me with Spring. Like, I feel like it's better at reloading things. So maybe that, I don't even know if that is a thing that it improved or not, but I've felt like it's been easier since Zeitwerk, but I don't know, maybe not.
Well, as the junior programmer here, the one with the least experience, my advice to every programmer out there, regardless of experience, is get rid of Spring, please. I don't know what, does it even have a benefit now that we have Bootstrap? Because I read some tweet that said it didn't, and it always causes me pain and suffering, and then I get really angry, and then I vow to never use it again. And then I delete it. I put it in something in my CSH file that disables it everywhere.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if the benefit of it is near as much with Bootstrap. That's interesting. May I have to look that up and see?
I'm sure it provides some benefit, because otherwise they wouldn't have left it in, I would think, but I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know what the differences would be.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Hashtag delete Spring. Let's get it trending.
You were feisty about the Spring.
Oh, dude, there was a day I lost. I don't want to talk about it. It still hurts.
This is the like modern -- skip Turbolinx, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Turbolinx
is pretty fetch until you run into like an issue with Bootstrap, and then you get angry, and then you vow to delete Bootstrap.
Are you keeping, you're keeping Bootstrap over Turbolinx, huh?
Oh, no.
Over Turbolinx.
I hacked together things in our application JS file, or NXJS, whichever one it is at the time, to get around Turbolinx issues with Bootstrap. And then I go complain to Nate about how much I hate Bootstrap. Well, hate's a strong word. I like Bootstrap, and I like the things it provides. I don't want to use Bootstrap on CodeFund specifically.
Yeah, I hear you. And anything, the more you design it custom, the like less valuable Bootstrap becomes. It's just really, really fast for prototyping stuff. Can't complain about that.
No, you definitely cannot. And I 100% agree with that. But when you are putting like a custom theme with its own gigantic spaghetti mess of custom JavaScript on top of the already issues there exist with like just basic Bootstrap JavaScript Turbolinx, it's just, you're in for a bad day, a bad couple days, maybe even a bad week. I don't want to confess anything. My employer might be listening, but you're in for a really frustrating amount of time to figure that out and to figure out the exact combination of like skip or before cache, after load combinations and the correct like Bootstrap tool tip things you have to do to like get it to render. And then when you hit back on the back button of the browser, and then all of a sudden you have two items, like two double list items, or like you still have things open that should be closed. It's just so frustrating. And I'm very, very, very frustrated by this, because this has been an ongoing issue.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest downfall on Turbolinx's launch, was like the documentation around the conceptual change you have to use it. Because like, we wrote the Vue Turbolinx library that is kind of used all over now. And it went through quite a few iterations, but there's still like people confused on it all the time, where it's like, look, if you want to use anything with Turbolinx, you need to make sure that it sets up on Turbolinx load. That's fine. Everyone understands that like fairly quickly, because they know that like, well, when the page loads, we just listen to this instead of DOM content ready. However, like, you have to also be aware that you're not leaving stuff behind when you cache the page, because Turbolinx's cache will like not mount your stuff the second time if you replace the DOM element you were looking for and it got removed when the first thing ran. So there's all kinds of like you know, problems if you don't tear down the JavaScript library properly, because sometimes they edit the DOM that you just mounted to or whatever, and voila, yeah, it works the first time, but not on the back button. And yeah, there was some guy I helped recently. He was like, I think there's a bug in Vue Gerbil Links. And it's like, well, it's been around for quite a few months, years now even, or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you know, this library you happen to use in Vue sets something up and caches it in the plugin internally, and you didn't call teardown. So nothing is going to work the second time around until you set up a teardown. And the concept, like, was a big mindset shift for people, I think, because you didn't really have to understand JavaScript very well before single page apps. That made things life a lot more complicated.
Yeah, my buddy Julian has a library called Attractor, which has like plugins for Ruby and JavaScript, which helps you show code churn and complexity and things like that. But I plugged it into CodeFund just to see what it would do, and it showed me that there's been a lot of churn around some certain JavaScript files where I've been having to monkey around and fix Turbolinks related issues over the past month during our redesign process. But I think I found everything. And then I think there actually is one issue that I saw, and it was like late in the day, and I was just so frustrated. And I just stared at it for a little while, and I was like, you know, until someone finds this, I'm going to pretend I didn't see it.
That's how I like to maintain my code bases too.
It was just such like a fringe case, and like I was just like, Turbolinks, why? I think I might have actually fixed it like the following day, but that night when I saw it, I was just like so frustrated by it.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. Well, I think that wraps up our episode this week, huh?
Yeah.
It's been another episode of Andrew Rants.
Yeah, us just venting for an hour.
I don't know. It's kind of nice. I feel like this is pretty normal, real conversation. I enjoy it.
It's free therapy for software developers.
Remote Ruby therapy.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me, fellas, and thanks for listening if you're listening, and we'll do this again next week.
All right. See ya.
100%. See ya.